Welcome to Bruins Benders Live postgame after game three, a huge 4-2 win for Boston. You're with Maddie and Smitty. It's presented by Inside the Rink through InsideTheRink.com. And as we said after game two, the Bruins would have to come in tonight, probably win a gritty, gutsy road win where you had some ups and downs and things wouldn't go your way. And it's exactly how it played out. The Bruins showed incredible mental toughness, made a bunch of mistakes here and there, but after all is said and done, they came up with just an enormous road win and a huge win, and it was led by the captain, Brad Marchand.
Yeah, Marchand, especially down the stretch, huge, huge. I mean, you can't say enough about it. I don't know if the goal was credited to Bertuzzi or to Riley in front, but 28 seconds later, Bruins have a great shift in the O-zone, and Marchand just an absolute short side hide snipe on a great feed from Danton Heinen, and then he closes it out with an empty netter. I don't know if I've seen him that excited to score a goal since the Stanley Cup final. I really haven't. He jumped in. He looked like Michael Jordan. He was jumping in the air for joy. I don't know if I've seen that from him. He was pretty fired up. And, you know, he's been fighting it for quite a while now. And for him to come through in that moment, I think was huge for him personally and also for the team.
Yeah, I think it's a huge lift for the team because, you know, he hasn't been right. He's been okay. He's had a bad year. He's had a good production year and things and so forth, but he hasn't been himself. He is aging. He probably won't be himself again. But if this is what they can get out of him, this is what they need when their backs are against the wall or when they really need a goal or a play to be made, then he needs to be that guy, take some of the pressure off Pastrnak and be the guy who can come up with a big play. And that was a enormous goal with just a signature off-footed shot, short side, like just like in the 2011 Cup Finals when he had that short side shot against Luongo to get them going, the same sort of play. And that was such a huge, huge moment for him. And I think you saw that from him because he hears it and he feels it and he feels sort of the pressure and the people saying he's not himself and they need more and so forth. And there's an enormous amount of pressure, you know, added on with the captaincy. Absolutely. That he now feels like he really has to come through in these types of situations and to be able to do it in that setting in Toronto. After all of the fighting and the scrumming with Bertuzzi all game long, and to come home and to at the end of the day get the big goal, it's just a huge moment, like you said, for the team. It's because that's what they needed, and to get that from him, I think there's just a huge sigh of relief from the team too that their captain came through, and that's something that needed to be done. But what this game started with was the decision to go back to Jeremy Swayman and continue the rotation. And Swayman shows again with several just enormous stops, especially in the third period against the Maple Leafs. And he makes 28 saves out of 30 shots, a lot of them really big saves and in high danger areas again. And you have to wonder when you have to just kind of go with Swayman because the Maple Leafs haven't solved him.
If they don't go to Swayman in game four, there will be a riot in the streets of Boston. there should be because he's been that good. No fault of Omark. Omark played well in the last game. The team around him didn't give him much. But now you got to ride the hot guy. Like Swayman has shown it in this playoffs. And my thing with the rotation now is you go with the guy that's winning until he loses. And if he loses, if you want to switch it up, then by all means, switch it up. But right now you got to ride the hot hand, and that is Jeremy Swayman 100%. He was a man between the pipes tonight, calm, cool, and collected when everyone and your mother was in the crease with him at the end. And he's chatting up John Tavares like no big fucking deal. At the end, after, right, you know, guys were lying on him and he's just cool as the other side of the pillow and just, maintains his composure and comes up with the big saves when the Bruins really needed it most.
Yeah, and then, of course, he gets knocked down by Max Domi, you know, in a TV timeout,
yeah.
Kind of smirks it off. He goes, ass over tea kettle. He gets up, just kind of smirks it off, and it doesn't rattle him at all. And the thing I like about Swayman is that this year he's shown a little bit of personality in the net. Like he's come out and sort of challenged people at times, and he's showing a little bit of grittiness to him and edginess that we've seen in Tim Thomas back in the day, like that type of thing. Like,
he's a little feisty.
Yeah, he's a little feisty, more feisty than Allmark, to be honest with you. And yeah. I think in a series like this, I think you need his attitude as well, because it's starting, it has to be starting to get into the minds, as you said, last recap, it has to be starting to get into the minds of the Maple Leafs that when push comes to shove, we can't get by the big one by this guy. I mean, they had a goal tonight that went off Lindholm's leg.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's something that he, you know, just could, you know, can't make that save. So for the most part, makes all the saves. I just think you have to go with it, because you run the risk of, you know, Allmark losing game four, and you lose the momentum that you had. You lose the chance that you could really put one of the daggers into this team in game four if you don't put in Swayman again.
Yeah.
He's the guy.
It's a mental thing now with the Leafs and maybe even with the Bruins.
Sure.
Like if this guy's in the net against this team, we won't lose. And I think that adds to the confidence of the Bruins, and it takes something away from the Leafs. So I think you got to stay with that. I think you got to stay with that until, you know, something happens that proves otherwise. You got to ride the hot hand. And like you said, if, you know, you put Swayman in game four, you take two in Toronto, you know, that puts a stranglehold on the series. So I think you really, really, really have to go with Swayman in game four and just ride the hot hand.
Sure. And when Austin Matthews has 12 goals and 11 games against Linus Allmark and hasn't been, he hasn't yet been able to solve, you know, Swayman. And, you know, I just think that right now, with the way Swayman's playing and seeing the puck and the confidence he's playing with, I just think it's so hard to go back to Allmark, even though Allmark's been fine.
Yeah, he was good in the last game. He was good.
I just think it's Swayman.
Yeah, it has to be.
And I'll be honest with you. If they lose this series, if they lose game four and then lose this series, I think that would be a big part of the reason why, is that they didn't know when to just go with the hot guy and they fell in love too much with the rotation. I don't want that to happen. I don't want it to be one of the causes to lose the series and an opportunity to put the Maple Leafs away. Because right now you have to think that the Maple Leafs are thinking, oh no, not again. And if they lose two in a row at home and go down 3-1 and have to win three in a row with their history, I just don't think they can do it.
Yeah,
I think this is an enormous game four.
It is an enormous game, and all the pressure will be on Toronto for all those reasons that you just laid out. They need to win at home. They need to split at home. If they lose two at home. Bruins have a stranglehold on the series, and all that history comes back, you know, being down 3-1. The Toronto media, the Toronto fans will be all over this team and blaming them and saying they can't win and they're chokers and all this stuff. And that will just weigh on them, I think. So it really is pivotal for the Bruins. And especially if the Bruins can score early and take the crowd out of it, I think that would be a huge going to the Bruins winning the series.
So the Maple Leafs get on the board first. Matthew Nyes, after a beautiful pass from Mitch Marner, sets him up for a goal right near the crease and a tap in to put him up 1-0. And then there's this scrum with Marchand and Bertuzzi near the bench. The refs kind of let it go for a while. And Frederick gets a lane on the left side, takes a shot that should be saved 100 times out of 100 by Samsonov. It finds a hole just inside the post. And it's a huge goal to give up at that point, because the Leafs really look like they started to gain a real solid control, especially in 5-on-5 play against the Bruins, where it didn't seem like the Bruins went 12 minutes at one point without a shot on net. And then Frederick has that sort of seeing eye goal, and it really changed the outcome, you know, the sort of the outlook of the game.
It did, because it allowed the Bruins to tie it up. It took the momentum away from the Leafs. The crowd was starting to get into it, and the Bruins kind of capitalized on that and were able to, get some momentum of their own. They go into the second intermission tied 1-1 instead of down 1-0, which is huge. And, you know, Freddie needed that for his personal confidence as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I believe, did they say it was his first playoff goal? Is that right?
I think it may have been.
So yeah. I think I saw that somewhere that it was first playoff goal. So, you know, a couple of things there, you know, he gets off the schneid. He'd been kind of struggling for a bit too, to kind of find his game until late in the year. So a bunch of positives on that play for Boston. And then in the third, it was almost like the Bruins played kind of rope-a-dope through the course of the game. Like the first two periods, you know, they were kind of like conservative. They didn't want to give up any odd man rushes. And the Leafs still got plenty of like slot chances, and Swayman was huge. And then in the third, the Bruins forecheck was much better than it had been in either of the first two periods. I feel like once they got behind, and this is kind of a history with this team, once they get behind, they kind of start to realize like we need to play with more urgency. I don't know why that doesn't happen earlier in the game.
I know.
They got behind and they started to play with more urgency and get in harder on the forecheck. Mm-hmm. Their legs started to work. And they started to cause the turnovers that we've said all along. If you get the pucks in deep and you can get on their D, they will make mistakes. But the first two periods, the Bruins weren't skating. They were gliding in. The Leafs had plenty of easy exits. And then in the third, you know, after the Leafs took the 2-1 lead, I really think the Bruins' urgency stepped up a level, and then that was the difference going down the stretch, you know, led by Brad Marchand.
Right, and then, of course, it was Marchand who gets the game-winning goal and then the empty netter to finish it off. In this game, how about this? 135 hits total. There was 13 block shots from Boston in the first period alone. They ended up with 24. And I thought, you know, he took a couple of penalties, but I thought Mason Lowry played pretty well. He did almost gave up the game with a little backhand flip in front of his own net that Swayman had to make a save on. It scared the life out of me. But other than that, I thought he moved the puck well. He sent JVR in alone at one point on a really nice play up the left wing. He's a great puck mover. He looks very fluid out there when he's moving the puck. I thought he was an upgrade overall, even though he had a penalty that was a cross check that shouldn't be called. I mean, it happens all the time. Mm-hmm. Total dive. And the second one was a trip. But at that point, I mean, I don't know if I would have called that one either. A couple soft calls, really.
Yeah.
On him. But other than that, I thought he did fine.
Yeah. I thought the officiating overall was terrible. But there was so many soft calls. They set the threshold early with the low ride penalty, and then they went away from it. Like, there were plenty of other cross checks that they could have called in front of the net that were similar to low rise that went uncalled, you know, both ways. But if you're going to call that one early in the game, that's the way you have to call the game. And they just didn't. They called the game based on what the Maple Leafs fans' reactions were to plays on the ice. I mean, you know, Brick commented it on in the broadcast. You know, they're Maple Leafs have the puck in the zone. You know, they take it down low. I think it was Matthews or Tavares or somebody get tripped down low. It was probably the low right play. And then no refs' arms are up. And then as soon as the Leafs fans react, an arm shoots up, which is, you know, convenient. So the Bruins had to battle through a lot in this game, I think. And they did play through it. They killed penalties and were able to withstand some of those pushes by the Leafs and you know, ended up coming out in the end with the W.
I thought there's several situations. There was a situation at the end. I don't know if it was. I think it was the end of the first or second where Ryan Reeves goes on this rampage and a shift and hits a couple of guys. But the Bruins possess the puck the entire time, so he's out hitting guys, and the Bruins maintain possession like the whole time of it, and really showed a lot of poise. Even though the crowd's going wild, Reeves is hitting everybody in sight. He crushed Zaka, crushed Pastrnak, like it was. he was just going out like a madman. But Bruins maintained possession and didn't let them rattle them. And at that point, I thought to myself, you know, the Bruins are really up to the challenge. Whether or not they'll win or not, I don't know. But they didn't back down. It didn't change their play at all. And I thought that was a really good sign at that point in time after Reeves finally showed himself and started hitting some people.
Yeah, it was. It was a good show of composure by the Bees. You know, there's a couple of comments here from Facebook. The refs were against the Bruins. What game did you watch?
I don't, you know, look, if they're against the Bruins, whatever. There were some really soft calls on the Bruins. I will say that the call on Tavares at the end should have been let go, too.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
The officiating stunk.
That's what I'm saying. And I said it to someone during the course of the game. You know, the refs aren't out to screw your team. They don't hate the Bruins. They don't love the Leafs. They just suck at their jobs. That's what the problem is. They're terrible at their fucking jobs. And so the officiating is wildly inconsistent, and they don't make calls that you think they should make. They don't make calls the Leafs fans think they should make. So if everyone's mad at them, you know, then it's probably that they're shitty and bad at their jobs, and not necessarily they're out to get you or the Bruins or the Leafs. It's just that they're bad at their jobs. And I was aggravated by the whole thing. I said at one point during the game that Francis Chouinard has Leafs feety pajamas that he sleeps in because, I mean, it just seemed like he was, you know, pro Leafs in this game. But, you know, the calls were soft. And if it was up to me, the calls that should have been made, there was probably a handful that should have been made. Two high sticks that they didn't call on the Leafs against the Bruins, the one over the glass, which they have to call. And then there was probably a call on Marchand where he went in high on Bertuzzi. They could have called him for an elbow.
They could have called him on the trip at center ice.
They could have called him on a trip at center ice, you know, but they could have called Bertuzzi for three other plays that he made during the course of the game. So it's just the way that you're watching the game. You want the Bruins to win. So you're biased against the refs, as am I. I think the refs are terrible, and I think the Bruins got screwed a little bit tonight, but that's the way it goes. And it's the playoffs, and the Bruins battled through it. That's the most important part, is that the Bruins didn't let any of that bullshit affect them. You know, people say, oh, they were playing, you know, 4-on-9 or, you know, whatever. Jack Edwards even mentioned at one point, Bruins are playing 4-on-9. But the Bruins didn't let that bother them. They didn't get away from their game. They maintained their composure. They played a really good road game. And they ended up, you know, in the third period with a chance to win and then capitalize because they, you know, won some wall battles. I thought they were much better on the wall tonight than they were in game two.
Right, and James agrees with you. He says that the refs suck. You're 100% right, so you can take that home and sleep well tonight. So Jake DeBrusk scores the second goal. Now, he has 9 goals in his career in the postseason against the Leafs. I mean, this is a team that he loves to play against in the playoffs, and Jake comes up with a huge goal to make it 2-1, and then Bert scores to make it 2-2. I guess maybe it wasn't Bert. I don't know who scored it.
I think
it
they credit it to Bert, I think.
To Bert, he shot it over, and it went off Lindholm's leg and in, and then Marchand had the two to end it. And the Bruins outshot him 34-30. There just seemed to be a lot more high danger chances for Toronto, though.
I mean, the Bruins did have 2 breakaways that they couldn't capitalize early in the game, Zacha and JVR. Mm-hmm. So, but the power play for the Bruins in this series, you know, we were worried about it going in 4-for-9. Four for nine.
Yeah, Beth, I mean, it's right. The power play has finally shown themselves.
Yeah, and it's
4 out of 9.
And it's and it's about time, Beth. You're absolutely right. And that has been a huge source of strength for the Bruins in this series. And without it, you know, they're not leading the series for sure.
No, and I think that Shattenkirk going there has been big. And I also think that having that line of, you know, Pastrnak and Heinen and Zacha, and just having them play as a line is work too. And they're showing some good movement, some good cycle, and they're getting pucks toward the net. And that's, and like you said in a tweet earlier today, it's screw the quality over quantity thing. Get the quantity on the net, especially after that goal by Freddie.
Yeah. I mean, the playoffs is a different animal. It just is.
Right.
You know, you look at the goal that Toronto scored, that Bert scored, you know, Riley shot from the point, traffic in front, hits somebody and goes in. Like, goes in. Doesn't matter who it went in off of. It's a goal.
Right.
So
right.
The Bruins have to take that same mentality, that same approach, and get pucks to the net, because Samsonov is not the greatest goaltender in the world.
No.
So
no.
I think the more pressure you put on him to make saves, you know, he'll either make a mistake or he'll give up a juicy rebound like he did on the Marchand shot that DeBrusk scored on the power play. DeBrusk cruising through the slot, picks up the loose change and puts it in, and all of a sudden it's a tie game. So the quantity of shots really, in my mind, is more important than quality come playoff time, 100%.
Now, the thing I noticed tonight, and I don't know if it was just me getting frustrated, especially in the third period, but I just didn't think Charlie McAvoy played that well tonight. And as I'm thinking about it, and I looked back in the last several Stanley Cup winners, every team, like a stud defenseman, from Pietrangelo to Makar to Doughty to Duncan Keith to Chris Letang, to every team had a stud defenseman in their prime, just being a stud, just being a horse. And if the Bruins have any aspirations to win the Stanley Cup with Charlie McAvoy and the team, he's got to be that guy. And especially in the third period tonight, there were some points, especially in the last maybe 6 or 8 minutes after the Bruins took the lead, where I said to myself out loud, what is McAvoy doing?
Yeah, he was out of position a bunch, I thought. And he gets caught up ice, and I feel like he just does that and doesn't necessarily think of the score and the time of game. And right. take into account, like, his hockey IQ as far as when to jump up, I think is a little off right now. I think he's, you know, he's on Monty's like transition, up ice. Sometimes with the lead late in the game, you know, make the first pass and then relax a little bit, you know, settle right. into your defensive position, you know, shut down plays, get the puck out of your own end. And I'll, how about this? I'll tell you. The Bruins might win the cup, and the stud back there, you're going to laugh in my face. Yes, it might be Brandon Carlo.
100%. 100%. Carlo was outstanding tonight, I thought.
He's a shutdown D-man.
Shutdown. Yep.
He scored a goal earlier in the series. Yeah. He has a good shot. He's playing against Matthews in the toughest minutes. And I tell you, it may be that Brandon Carlo is the guy that you rely on in those situations instead of McAvoy.
Yeah, 23-43 of minutes tonight. Two shots, two hits, two block shots. And like you said, just when he's out there with Matthews, he was a plus two. I mean, he was just really, really good. And any time, you know, his reach, you know, anytime anybody tried to make a move on him, his reach was just distracting, and it interfered with any type of move, any type of play anybody wanted to make. Mm-hmm. Now, McAvoy had some, you know, he had 8 hits. He had 3 blocks. He had 5 shots on net. He had played almost 26 minutes. But I think at the end, like you said, and we've talked about this with the team as a whole, like changing the way you play slightly dependent on the game situation.
Yes.
And sometimes they continue to kind of play the same way, and that's when they lead to turnovers, trying to advance the puck too quickly, trying to put it in a bad area, like Lowry did tonight. Like, after they scored the goal to take the lead, after the tying goal to make it 2-2,
right,
Lowry throws the puck, a little flimsy backhander, in front of Swayman.
Yeah.
And it ends up a shot on net, scrum, like, just place is going wild. Like, if Toronto scores there, you're dead. Like, it's a problem. So they tend to do that as a team. They've done better job lately. Tonight they finished the game well. Having the power play helped. sure. at the end.
Yeah.
But I think they have done a better job in the last couple weeks doing that thing. But sometimes, you know, you're right. They don't understand, I guess, the situation at hand, and they don't play to the situation. And in that instance, you know, again, a couple turnovers that can end up in the net, and that's how you lose leads late. But DeBrusk and Carlo have been the two best players in the first three games, along with Swayman, on the team. And it's really not that close. I mean, they've been terrific, both of them.
They have been terrific. Yeah, and I would say that those guys are the three stars of the series so far for the Bruins. I think you could throw Marchand in there. Pastrnak's had his moments. I think Charlie Coyle's been very good, underrated in a 200-foot capacity. He's been really good, responsible both ways. You know, just getting back to the defense and the turnovers, it's okay to go D to D, fellas. Like, there was a play Lindholm had, like, gets the puck from Wotherspoon, he skates it to the boards, and now he's out of options. He doesn't have anywhere to go with it. So he just fires it up the wall for an icing, and then Toronto wins an offensive zone draw and then has a scoring opportunity. Right. It's plays like that where it's just like, use your common sense, use your head. If you don't have a play, don't force it up the ice. Go back to your D pair. It's okay. Mm-hmm. You have the fucking lead. You can pass the puck back and forth to each other all night long.
Right.
You know, and make them come get you. And then maybe you open something up the ice. But you don't have to force things that aren't there. Use your hockey IQ. Have some poise with the puck. And just make good decisions going down the stretch. And it'll be, you'll make things so much easier on yourself and the team if you do that.
And they did that at the end of the second period when they had that delayed penalty where they ragged the puck a while and they shaved off a ton of minutes to get a better power play sequence.
Right.
And then, you know, that's the type of play you have to make where you just kind of rag the puck, keep possession, nothing stupid, and that kind of thing. So I agree with you. Tonight, Charlie Coyle had 7 hits. Jake DeBrusk had 7 hits. I mean, they were really active defensively, physicality. You know, the Bruins accepted that challenge. Marchand talked about it before the game today, is that the Maple Leafs are different in that they do make a more concerted effort defensively. They do play a little more physically than in past. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing it in this series. This has been a real physical series, which is not typical of Boston, Toronto, more wide open. There hasn't been a ton of ice in 5-on-5 for large stretches of games. And the Bruins were able to at least kind of grind it out and get and capitalize on opportunities that they get, and they end up getting the win tonight, which is a huge one. And Beth said Wotherspoon hit by a puck early. That looked rough, but he ended up coming back into the game and got hit just in a bad spot inside the knee, where there's not a lot of padding. Went down like a ton of bricks. Can't afford to lose another defenseman there, for sure, with Peak out. And I thought that Shattenkirk played 10 minutes again today, so he's only really playing power play specialty kind of thing. It's hard to have a guy, especially defenseman, play that few minutes because it wears on your other guys. I mean, Carlo was over 23, Lindholm and McAvoy were over 25. You know, so it's hard. I understand he's really valuable, Shattenkirk, on the power play, but as the series goes on and as the playoffs go on, is this something that wears down the D?
It's possible that it could, but I think, you know, come this time of year, that's what you're going to see. You know, your top four guys are going to play the majority of minutes, and your bottom third guy are going to be out there, you know, hopefully in advantageous matchups against the other team's third or fourth line guys, and they don't lose shifts, and they don't give up goals while they're out there, and as long as you do that, I think you're fine. He does add on the power play because he's just – he talk about a guy with poise. There's a guy with poise with the puck, and I think he does – a nice job on that. And, you know, I'm not crazy about the other options right now because it would either be Derek Forbort going in or Matt Grizzlick. And, you know, depending on the matchups, I'm not sure that's something I want. What do you think of Wotherspoon tonight? You know, we did mention, and we also should mention JVR as well, who came in for Lauko. I thought JVR was pretty good tonight.
I thought he did well. Yeah, I thought he did fine.
I thought he was as good as he's been in a long time for them.
Had
a couple of pretty good chances, was in on the forecheck a couple of times, causing some problems. So I thought he was pretty good. So it'll be interesting to see if, you know, because they won, if he stays in or if Lauko comes back in game four. And Wotherspoon, I thought, was really shaky early on. He did have that shot block, but he had a couple of turnovers early. And he did mention to Adam Pellerin on the Nesson broadcast that, you know, he definitely could notice the difference between regular season and postseason. So I think it was a little bit of him trying to get used to game speed and, you know, playoff speed and intensity early on. And I thought as the game went on, he was better. So I think, you know, he was a positive, a net positive in this game, you know, after a little bit of a shaky start.
Yeah, he had three hits, three blocks. He played 19-10, played quite a few minutes. Of course, with Shattenkirk not playing much, you know, everybody kind of gets, you know, raises the amount of time they play. But I thought he did play better. The first period was shaky, you know, a couple of turnovers, a couple of times he got hemmed in, and largely because of him. But he looked like he did have some jitters and some deer in the headlights a little bit in the first period, but he started to get accustomed to it. I think he laid out a couple of hits and he started to, you know, get into a decent rhythm. And I thought he was fine. I thought JVR was pretty good. He played 10-46, but he had two shots. He hit a post. You know, he had two of the best chances they had up to a point all game long. And he had a couple, blocks. I mean, he filled the stat sheet a little bit in just 10 minutes of play. I'd roll him out there again. He got two nights off. You come in a third, you know, on day three, I'd throw JBR in there again, because I think he has some size. He's a veteran. He can play some power play minutes. You know, he knows what to do, how to play. He's played in Toronto. I mean, I think there's a lot of good positives when it comes to him. And again, I've been on the Lauko, you know, the Lauko bashing committee, but he's just, there's just not a lot there. You know what I mean? At least JVR brings a couple of high quality values to the thing, you know, and veteran kind of guy in power play kind of acumen.
Yeah. And he's got an NHL shot too. He's scored a lot of goals in the NHL.
Scored 300 goals.
Yeah. I mean, that's a guy that, you know, I wouldn't mind having out there, because, you know, he's one of the things that if you catch him the right way, and he had a couple chances tonight, you know, he could change a game with a shot or a play. Whereas, you know, if Lauko's coming down on that breakaway, you know, you're probably thinking he's going to fire it off the high glass. I mean, it's just, you know, a different level of talent there that I think JBR adds, and the size also is a big thing. And if he's going to play physically and get to the net front and do those kinds of things, he should be in there.
Yeah, Austin Matthews tonight with just three shots on net, so that was a good sign. It was Domi who led the team with five. Marner and Matthews played for 23 minutes in the game. And as you go forward now, and William Nylander has been out for three games now. Mm-hmm. There's been reports that maybe it's a head injury. They've been really quiet about it. He's been skating before games the last couple games. They said there was a chance he could play tonight. You would think that eventually he could play maybe even Saturday night. And that adds a new, you know, a new dimension to them, a really good offensive player who can score goals.
Absolutely. We mentioned it on the last recap that he's probably the second best forward this year, behind Matthews. He's just dynamic with the puck, makes a lot of smart plays, scored over 40 goals. So he does a lot of things well for them. He drives that line, and it just adds to the depth on the team. You know, if he goes in, you're probably looking at, you know, I don't know who comes out, maybe a guy like Robertson possibly, on one of the, as you know, Domi, right, or somebody else,
9 minutes, I think, tonight.
Somebody else will get bumped down to a lower line. Maybe it's Reeves even. I doubt it. Because the Bruins have Maroon, but it'll be one of those lower line guys that will come out and they'll bump somebody down, and Nylander slots into the top six, and you know they're already dangerous, but that makes them even more dangerous. So the Bruins will definitely have their hands full in Game Four with a hungry Leafs team, and that's another thing that the Bruins really have to kind of figure out here is how to match that desperation that Toronto is going to show in Game Four, because they didn't match it in Game Two, and it cost them a win. So they really need to figure out how to, whether it's physicality early, getting the lead early, whatever the case may be, they need to match that Leafs desperation here in game three to put a stranglehold on this series.
And that's why I think the ultimate sign of desperation is to put Swayman back in.
I'm with you.
To say, we need to win this game as much as you do, so we're putting our hot goalie in there. We both say go with Swayman in game four.
100%.
And so at 100%. Okay, your predictions for game four.
Game four, I'm going with the same one. 3-2 Bruins in overtime.
Okay. You're looking for an overtime. There's going to be an overtime game in this series.
And did we mention that you were Nostradamus?
I was
this?
Nostra.
You?
Mofo-damus.
I mean, everybody should go back to the game two recap. Listen to the predictions section of that of that recap. Go back and check it out. And you'll see 100. Mr. Matty Berry called this shit for reals. 4-2 Bruins with an empty netter.
An empty netter.
Called it all.
I specified.
Called it all.
Called it.
So
I said gritty, gutsy win.
Yes.
Ups and downs, gritty, gutsy, grinding win, 4-2 with an empty netter. I said.
You did.
Those words.
And play the lottery, my friend.
I know.
Or stay away from picking anyone other than the fucking Bruins. So what's your prediction now for game four?
Hey, I'm going Bruins get the W, and I'm going to go you know what? I'm going 3-1 Bruins.
Okay.
I'm going – God help me. I hope it's Swayman, and it's 3-1, and the Maple Leafs are taking on water at the end of that one.
I love the shit out of that. I do.
Yeah, 3-1. Marchand, Pasternak gets on the board, and then some rando just gets on the board.
Give me
Boquist
a
or someone.
Boquist, that would be sweet. Yeah. Boquist
someone
or
just bangs one in.
Johnny Beecher or Danton Heinen throws one in.
Someone. Heinen, how about this? Heinen makes a terrific play to the Marchand goal.
Sure he does.
Digs it out behind the net. Digs it out. Gets it right to him on the stick. Bang. It's in the net in a hurry. That was a fantastic under the radar play by Heinen.
He does a lot of little things really well.
Yep.
A lot of little things really well. And I think he fits well with skill on a line because he can make the little plays that get those guys either, you know, passes or time and space to allow them to create and score goals. So, a really good addition for the Bruins. Should have been the fucking seventh player. But he is our Bender's eighth player award winner.
Yes, he is eighth player award. He's really solidifying that.
He's locked that shit up.
Smug.
So Danton Heinen, me, you, Mr. Matty Berry, Nostradamus himself, together at Lops after the season.
Yeah, and
we'll buy you all the beers.
Cheers. Next Brewers Benders Live is Saturday night after Game 4. Game 4 is at 8 p.m. It'll be Saturday night in Toronto.
Hockey night
Bruins
in Canada.
The series 2-1 after a 4-2 with an empty netter winner in Toronto tonight. We'll see you again on Saturday. Thanks for watching and go Bruins.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.